Welcome to Bankless Africa, a podcast by Africans on building and innovating Web3 into a new frontier for the people of Africa. I'm your host, Miss Purple, and each episode, I get together with some wonderful people across the continent and the diaspora to talk, ideate, and dream about the bright future of our people. Stay tuned for another exciting episode.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bankless Africa. I am, of course, Miss Purple, and I am always beyond excited to be able to have these conversations both for you, the listener, but also with the innovators within the space. But without much further ado, I would like to introduce you all to Felix from KotaniPay. How are you, Felix?
Hi, Miss Purple. Nice to be here.
Awesome to have you here. I, of course, have heard lots about KotaniPay, but before we get into that and into other topics as well, we have a tradition here, which is we start off with a story. Can you tell us the story of Felix, your career, your passions, what you're interested in, and of course, you know, how you ended up here?
So I've been very interested in technology, ever since I was very young. And I started venturing into a lot of what I do now sometime in 2016. So in 2016, I was looking into fourth industrial revolution technologies and trying to learn about this new exciting revolution called the fourth industrial revolution. And it was a set of technologies, everything from robotics through AI, VR to blockchain. And at the time, it seemed very ethereal, very unbelievable, but there was already quite a bit of evidence from the success of Bitcoin and Ethereum as a protocol that blockchain was going somewhere. There was a bit going on the AI front and a bit going on the VR, AR side. So all of these technologies were accelerating very quickly, and they're also converging. So that today, if you are talking about the metaverse, it's a convergence of several of these technologies, VR, blockchain, and so on and so forth. So got very interested in it, early. Started as a researcher for something called the Institute for Blockchain Studies. The story behind that is I just read a book by a lady called Melanie Swan, and she was talking about how the blockchain will be transformative for the new economy. I contacted her. She had this research institute. They had everyone around the world, from Latin America to Asia and the US, but they didn't have anyone in Africa. So I ended up being the first researcher from Africa. And a lot of my work then, this is around 2017, was just to look at ICOs and, you know, try and separate the rent-seeking tokens from the projects that, will probably survive long-term. And you're looking at the characteristics of those projects, everything from the team building it, the backers, the community, the concept, and so on. And so at the time, it was very clear to me that proof of stake will be the winner in terms of consensus, because at the time there was this push and shove on is it proof of work or proof of stake? At least right now, I think that's kind of settled, when it comes to environmental aspects of blockchains and processing payments. So proof of stake looked like a winner. So I transitioned to doing node validation. So basically validating transactions for proof of stake blockchains. And I was doing this with a team of people I met just at meetups. You know, I met people at meetups in Nairobi. We would share news with each other. We ended up forming WhatsApp groups. And eventually we ended up building this company called EOS Nairobi. So for EOS Nairobi, all we're doing is you basically have a server and you're running transactions for several proof of stake blockchains. The famous one at the time was EOS, but a couple of others came up later. Then what happened then was, as part of our work, we were supposed to educate communities on blockchain and its benefits. And it became very clear to us that it's going to be an uphill task to get mainstream adoption if we continue with the same approach, from the blockchain side or from the blockchain world. So a lot of what we were doing was developers among developers. And so we were communicating as developers and people were not understanding private keys, public keys, smart contracts, and so on. So we began having this desire to connect or bring on board as many people to the blockchain through the user experience side. And that's how we came to the KotaniPay idea, which I shall talk about later.
I have two questions for you on what you just said now before we get into the crux of the conversation. First one is, do you think the key is simply just being in the room? And that's how a lot of people can end up finding themselves being innovators within the space, or even being, you know, the creators or being part of phenomenal teams. Do you think that's all it takes, just being in the room, or is there more to it?
I think that's a start, right? So you want to be in the room where these discussions are happening, but you also want to take a deep interest in what is happening, right? So I personally didn't have a developer background, surprisingly, right? I was actually at the time doing a degree in medicine and surgery at the university. And, you know, I looked at what skills I had at the time and what skills I could apply to this new field. And that's how I got more and more and more and more into the field. Of course, later on, I tried and upped my technical skills. But just being in the room is a good start. Then taking interest draws you in. And before long, it's something that takes over your life. It's almost like a mission that you are on.
That's quite interesting. It's so mind-boggling sometimes to hear people talk about their history and how they got started and where they came from, because from a distance, it's like I would have never guessed that, you know, you had that kind of history. And, you know, I'll ask more on that, of course, a bit later on. But the second question I had was, you mentioned a bit about the use of AI and all of that. Do you think AI, okay, perhaps not does it have a place, but rather is it genuinely, truthfully, and authentically applicable to Africans, or is it just something that is more for other countries or more just simply English? Do you think there is a future for AI in a way, or in other different languages, other different cultures, other different, you know, economies and ways of life? Or is it strictly just one of those things that we would have to learn how AI wants to be used and then just get with it, and we can't exactly make it work for us?
And you see, that's even the sad part about, you know, AI as a technology. Because if blockchain is a decentralizing technology, AI is a very centralizing one. For you to train AI algorithms, you need millions of data points for the algorithms to work very well. So whether you're talking about the new one, ChatGPT, or you're talking about computer vision algorithms that, you know, help cars self-drive, you need like millions and millions of data, images, and so on to train this model. So the only companies that can do this are companies that have massive data banks. So you're thinking about, you know, the likes of Google and Facebook and so on. And that's why they are very much leaders in that sense. I don't think as a technology it can be ignored, right? So it runs most of our lives now. I think you've been in this situation where you have, you know, talked about something to a friend, and then the next thing you see is an ad advertising you, you know, something similar or the same thing. So it's very much part of today's technology. It's part of the fabric of technology today. The question is, how can we apply some of the principles we have in the blockchain ecosystem to make AI more open and more decentralized, so that it's not under the, you know, under a few you know, powers, it's actually more distributed. And the protocols that are really trying on this front, I think if you're talking about data accumulation and the decentralization of data, you have IPFS and you have the Ocean Protocol. Both of them have taken a very good approach of, can we monetize, can we make this incentivize people to be data storage sites or data storage nodes, and then can we use then this data to do other things like train models and so on and so forth? And they even companies like a very interesting one called Varna from the Silo ecosystem that then goes on and takes this data, sells the data, you know, the normal way, but it sells the data with your with your consent, and then distributes that value back to you in the form of stable tokens, so that you're not losing out on all the value you're creating on some of these platforms. So there's a way to decentralize AI today, and it's very dangerous the way we are moving towards more and more centralized AI by a few firms and a few governments.
I had no idea that you had that much information to share with us, but I truly appreciate it. If anything, I think, it's a reminder that we should be having more conversations. Just because the rest of the world is already having their own conversations doesn't mean we sit back and we just kind of wait for everything else to fall at our feet. But anyway, now to get back to, the reason why we're here today, tell us a bit about GhotaniPay. Beyond it being a stable coin to fiat on-ramp and, off-ramp service, what is the core mission of GhotaniPay and how have you worked towards these goals so far?
Yes. Starting from my story, I think one of the things we were looking at was the benefits of blockchain as a technology. So we're not just looking at blockchain tech and insisting that people must use blockchain tech. We're looking at in what ways is this technology beneficial to human beings and humankind. And, you can run through a couple of them. One, it's open and permissionless. So I don't need a permission for me to use stable coins or Bitcoin today. I can do so easily from my country as long as I have internet access. Two is the fact that it is decentralized. So it removes that aspect of centers of power, people who can basically ban your transactions or stop you from transacting. And this has happened even in Africa. This has happened even like in countries you wouldn't expect, in 2011 in Cyprus when they had US dollar issues there, they basically confiscated people's USD from their USD accounts, right? It helps you to it's transparent, so you can follow on transactions, and this has been very beneficial, especially for humanitarian organizations, making sure that the money gets to the end user. And the fees are like really, really low, and that's why a lot of remittance companies, MoneyGram included, are looking at it as a way to transfer value across the world, because you can do it instantly, 24/7, 365 days with very low fees. So it seems to many people, both in finance and in tech, that it's the next evolution of money. So when you hear people like Jack Dorsey talk about Bitcoin, they're talking about a currency for the internet, right? An internet currency generally. So we're looking at all these benefits and we're asking ourselves, are Africans really connected to these benefits? Because Africans are the ones who suffer most when it comes, for example, to issues of fees. When it comes to issues of confiscation, refugees, if you are a refugee and you have been like chased out of your own country and you're going to another country, you can't carry your currency with you. The payment system is very fragmented. So if you are a business, you can't do business with another African company very well. So we had a myriad of challenges on the continent that could be solved by blockchain technology. The only issue was nobody was doing it practically on the ground. So nobody was actually looking at solving these issues. So we started by asking ourselves, could we onboard as many people and could we make it as accessible as possible to many people? So the mission of GhotaniPay is to make the benefits of blockchain technology as accessible to as many people as possible in emerging and frontier markets. And of course, our primary focus right now is the African continent.
As the CEO and co-founder of something that is literally taking part of blockchain technology and part of, this way of life that a lot of Africans have lived off of, particularly remittances, what do you think is the missing gap, that core of information that a lot of us don't have? What's the issue in particular that makes so many people feel either skeptical or perhaps just feel like maybe it's not for them? Because that's how a lot of people, tend to view cryptocurrency, stable coins, whatever platform that uses any of those words in it. What's missing there? What do people need? Do they need to see it more in action? Because they have, though. There are people using these platforms all across the world, but something seems to be missing. Maybe a light hasn't gone off for a lot of us in our heads, but, as a person in your position, somebody who is creating something and you're seeing firsthand the issues or the amount of effort it takes to run something like this, what would you say is that missing piece of information?
Yeah, and you know, that's a great question. So as a CEO and as a co-founder, I spend a lot of time understanding customers. And a lot of my time, a lot of my efforts goes to understanding customers and seeing whether I can solve problems for them. So I tend to think a lot of what we're experiencing now in terms of not getting mainstream adoption has to do with the user experience. When you use Uber, for example, or any of these apps, you don't care about the TCP/IP protocols that are running Uber or any of these apps. You just use the app. You know, it works, and that's it. And for most consumers, most users, both in Africa and actually around the world, what matters is the thing works. So you made a very good point and said, we are taking the way that Africans live and we are combining it with some of the benefits that blockchain brings in. Because, you know, when it comes to something like payments, payments is actually personal. It's a personal, it's not like a culture. It's a culture in every country you go, there's a way in which people pay. In South Africa, a lot of them use bank accounts and cards. In East Africa, a lot of us use mobile money. In fact, like in Kenya, 98% of the population uses M-Pesa for payments. If you come to Nigeria, it's a different story. There's a lot of cash. There's a lot of bank accounts and so on. So it's very much a cultural thing. That's one thing. The second thing is, how do most people transact financially in Africa? It will surprise you that 96% of transactions in Africa are actually happening through USSD. As we speak right now, USSD or SMS interfaces are the primary way in which Africans transact with each other. And that's because 60% or so of commerce in Africa is still informal. So if you're going to bring these people to the blockchain, then we must start thinking about what interfaces are they willing to use? What interfaces are they familiar with? So if I was looking at low-income workers, or I'm looking at farmers, I'm looking at people who are, you know, receiving refugee payments, USSD is a perfect way to help them create wallets. And that was our first product. It was just a USSD or SMS interface that helps you create a blockchain wallet. The funds are stored on chain because that's where the security and the benefits are, but you interact with it from an SMS phone. Whether or not you have access to the internet, you can access these blockchain assets. And now I see other very, you know, prominent companies coming in and trying these things. A good example is Machankura in South Africa. The next thing is the connection to the payment channel. So again, if you are looking at Kenya, for example, you probably want to connect to what people are using every day to make payments, right, with, and that is M-Pesa. If you're in another place, you want to connect so I think that's why, for example, in the case of Nigeria, the P2P market thrives very well because it connects what people are using for daily sales and whatnot with crypto and blockchain. So I would say a lot of it is user experience and just studying how users are interacting with current financial payments. But the benefits are there. The benefits are there. They're very clear. It's just that we haven't made it very easy for our mainstream users to use these technologies.
For those who are perhaps not aware, USSD stands for Unstructured Supplementary Service Data, which essentially allows you to enter a string of digits, often bracketed by like a star or the hash symbol, to execute the transaction. Now, of course, like Felix mentioned, it is also the backbone of mobile money, which has taken Africa and Latin America by storm. So I'm curious to know, where are your services currently available? Because we know, at least this is what I've seen, that USSD codes tend to be challenging to apply globally, in the sense that whatever code I can use here in Lesotho will not be the same code that I can use in, say, South Africa or Kenya or Nigeria. So how have you been able to perhaps begin expanding Katani Pay, or are you strictly based in one location because of that particular issue?
Yeah, so you begin with user experience as a way of understanding why customers will or will not use stablecoins, crypto, blockchain. And what you realize soon after is we lack the infrastructure in Africa for these users to connect to the blockchain. And so KotaniPay started building out these infrastructure layers. So we started with USSD, and like you've rightfully said, USSD is tied to a particular telco. Now, if you think about a DeFi wallet that wants to onboard as many Africans as possible, it will basically mean that they will have to go to every country, talk to telcos in those countries, get approvals, get connected. And they're talking to telcos on both the mobile money side and the USSD side. And then after they've done all that, they can start serving their customers. That will ideally, that will take years. And not all DeFi apps, not all NFT marketplaces, not all wallets have, you know, resources like that. So we took on the work of setting up the infrastructure a country at a time. We started with Kenya, and a lot of our emphasis initially was on humanitarian use cases. So set up that infrastructure in Kenya, moved on and set up the same infrastructure in Ghana. This year, we will be launching in South Africa, and our focus will mostly be again on businesses there. And the aim by the end of the day is to have this infrastructure that you can connect through a single API. So you are a developer in Sweden, the US, Nigeria, wherever you are, even like here in Africa, you can just take this single API, open API, connect to it, and you can connect to all these channels without having to deal with all the legalese and everything else. So it's a very, like, you know, you're rightfully noted. When you talk about on-ramp, off-ramp, you're talking about dealing with local currency. It's a very tedious and legal process. The other ways to go about it, so that, for example, it's possible for you to launch an app that leverages on peer-to-peer networks in each of those countries, so that the peers, whoever the peer is the cash agent in this case. They're the one sending money to someone, so that then they can receive money on their app. And there are people who are, you know, following that approach. A good example is Chainlink from Nigeria. Basically, they have this app where as a P2P trader, you can participate in the on-ramp and off-ramp side of things. My desire over time will be, once we have built this infrastructure, will be to find a way to completely decentralize it. So instead of it being owned by a company like KotaniPay, it's actually owned by a community, a DAO. And perhaps the mistake on our side was starting with the company aspect and not starting with the DAO. But we actually believe in this concept of progressive decentralization. So if you haven't read about it, it's a 16Z's way of like launching Web3 products. So you start with a product. Once you've achieved product market fit, you open it up to a wider community. So again, a lot of the emphasis this year will be to open our API to the African developer community. So that if I'm in Morocco, I can actually just connect some of the channels in Morocco, and KotaniPay doesn't have to come to Morocco for there to be an on-ramp, off-ramp in Morocco. Same can be said of Lesotho or any other country.
Thank you for sharing that. Now, according to your site, you currently have 4,248 users. I stand to be corrected. Do you have a specific user target or perhaps a transaction target? And at that, is it a marketing matter or simply a time and education thing? Or do you simply feel whatever comes will come and you are okay with just having your, you know, 4,200 users find the most that they possibly can out of KotaniPay's services? Or, you know, are you, of course, looking to branch out and grow beyond those particular set of users?
Yeah. And, you know, perhaps we should update that number. So right now it's about 15,000 users. Those users are USSD wallet users. So they're users who use our USSD wallet product. We also have two other products that we have launched over time because of customer needs. One is the API that I'm talking about. So I probably don't have need for the USSD SMS side. I just want to be in a position to on-ramp and off-ramp my users directly from my mobile app, directly from my web app. That's the purpose of the KotaniPay API. There's also a third product called the stablecoin settlement solution, which we mostly use for businesses, because businesses tend to have high volumes that they want to move at good rates, fast and through trusted channels. So the stablecoin settlement solution is, we use stablecoins as the rails for settlement. And we are working in partnership with remittance companies, inventory finance companies, lending companies to ensure that they like the product and they're using it. So the targets for us are usually around volume, because our business model right now is a fee-based business model. We charge between 0.5% to 2% fees on cash in, cash out. And when we were beginning, I think it's 2021, at the end of 2021, when we began, we had processed something like $450,000. Last year, we processed $11 million. And it's quite clear that maybe this year we might process something like $50 to $100 million, based on just the demand for the API and stablecoin settlement solution products. So the numbers you're seeing there in terms of users are mostly just users on the SMS wallet. So farmers, low-income workers, etc. And that is usually tied to pilots we are doing. In terms of transactions within 2022 on the USSD wallet alone, we had 326,000 transactions. So whereas we have a user number of about 15,000, a lot of them use our app on a daily basis for whatever pilots they are participating in.
When you think that those 15,000 users are likely all human beings, all individuals, that is quite a feat, you know, especially in the growing phase of any business, any company, any innovation. It's always very tricky to figure out who is going to, you know, find a use case or find a reason to believe in something enough to actually use it on a regular basis. It's so much so that you can have 326,000 transactions. That says a lot. So congratulations on your growth. I do hope, of course, to continue to see more. Now, I did mention a bit earlier that there was something I specifically wanted to talk about, and that was remittances. You've already touched on it early on, but before we get into it, I would like to read some stats for you. I love numbers, and it's always a beautiful perspective to show us just how far off we are or how much money, you know, lies in something in particular, especially in remittances. Now, according to Statista and the World Bank, in 2021, the vast majority of remittances sent to sub-Saharan Africa went specifically to Nigeria, with a total value of $19.2 billion, and Ghana following with roughly $4.5 billion. Other countries like Kenya brought in $3.7 billion, Senegal $2.7 billion, Zimbabwe $2 billion, the DRC $1.3 billion, Uganda $1.1 billion, Mali $1.1 billion, South Africa $900 million, and Togo with $700 million. That is a lot of money. That is an insane amount of money. And remember that remittances often come from individuals who are sending money home. For us to send $19.2 billion back to Nigeria, that is a crazy amount. That means that there are people out there, people, either whether you're in Kenya or the US or the UK or in Lesotho, wherever you are, if you're not in Nigeria, you felt you needed to send that much money back home, not only needed to, but perhaps you were capable of doing so, which means there is money out there. You know what I'm saying? There is money out there, and there are Africans out there who are continuing to grow this entire continent as a whole. Now, on the flip side, for two specific countries, Tanzania and Nigeria, an example is $200 from these countries amounted to 27% and 19% of the sum sent on fees alone, respectively. So it's 27% of $200 in Tanzania, and then it's 19% of $200 in Nigeria. That is a huge chunk that is being chopped off. So can you imagine, from $19.2 billion in Nigeria, what that 19% of funds is, where it's floating, where it got lost? There is a lot you can do with 19% of $19.2 billion, yo. So with these numbers, it only then makes sense that people would be interested in easier and perhaps more affordable ways of sending this money across, services like what Kotani Pay is offering. How then do you reach these people outside of Africa who are likely to send money back home to their respective countries? Is there a way to get them to be more interested in using other services like Kotani Pay, or perhaps just getting into crypto and the use of stable coins to be able to bypass those fees? Because imagine as a family, you receive $200, but you have to lose 27% or 19% or however much percent of that $200 to fees alone. That's a large chunk that you can no longer be able to spend for your family. So is there a way to reach these people across the globe in a way that they can feel makes sense for them?
Yep, there is. And, you know, I just want to say, that's why sometimes I feel, you know, blockchain is built for Africa. I feel like it's here to liberate Africans economically, because there are so many ways in which we are locked out of the global economy, the global system. And, you know, blockchains and crypto can balance this this injustice. So one of it, like one of the things that you rightly said, is remittance is very expensive. I think for Africa, the average is something like 16%. This is not my report. This is the World Bank's and IMF's reporting on remittances. In fact, it's such a big problem. There's a goal by the UN to bring this remittance cost down to 3%. It's one of the SDG goals, for 2030. So how do we get to the 3%? Because there's an issue, there's a reason why the fees are the way they are right now. It's because if you're using all these correspondent banks, like correspondent bank system, you have middlemen who are taking on charges at every stage, because, you know, like they're in business, so they must sustain their businesses. So it's not in any way, it's not out of malice. It's just that current remittance flows are built on very old legacy systems. And that's why you see, like, we have a lot of fintechs now in Africa. People ask, why is it that there are like 400 or 1,000 fintechs from Nigeria alone? It's because of those volumes you talked about. It's such a big market opportunity. No one can solve all the problems that are there in the market. So whether you're talking about the FX side or the transfer side or the fee side or the user experience side, nobody can solve all those problems in one company. But number two, nobody can serve all that volume with the current infrastructure we have in Africa. So there's a lot of opportunity for disruption within remittance and payments. And this is coming from many sides. So to your point of how do we reach the diaspora, I believe was your question. One very good way, and I know, you know, many people will disagree with me, will be for current remittance companies to change the way they transfer value and to even consider using blockchain for that transfer of value to places like Africa, where they don't have infrastructure. So we have seen this with MoneyGram. So MoneyGram is one of the, you know, companies that is sort of like blamed for having high fees, extortionist fees, both on FX and their transaction fees. But they're now cost correcting. They're working with the Stellar blockchain to enable settlement via USDC. There are other remittance companies in Africa that are following suit. So in our case, for example, we're working with a few of them that are looking to use stablecoin infrastructure for those transfers. The second one will be just getting good fintechs that are not neobanks. So when you talk about neobanks, you're mainly talking about old banking, you know, old bank legacy systems. And on the top, you have a nice UI. So instead of having that, just have a nice UI plus new technologies. And I could name quite a bunch of companies that are working in that field, from AfriX to Nala, for example. So they need to leverage on these new technologies for that cost to come down. And then thirdly is just for us in the blockchain space to improve the experience through our wallets. So you can also create a wallet that is a remittance wallet, and its main work is to connect, you know, Nigerians in the UK to Nigerians back home. And again for this one, the user experience is easy to do. the challenge is the on-ramp, off-ramp. So that's why in our case as Kotani Pay, we are very much working on the on-ramp, off-ramp bit so that DeFi wallets and remittance wallets in the blockchain space can easily send money. So one is solve for the technology problem, which makes current costs very, very hard. And then how do you advertise? Mainly it's just like reaching out. So what I see with a lot of remittance companies is they speak at Diaspora Alliance events. So some of the prominent ones is the Africa Diaspora Alliance, which brings together several diaspora communities. And they tend to host events both here and abroad in the US, in the UK, where they bring all the diaspora members. And that's a good platform for blockchain wallets and remittance companies to talk about why how their solutions are better on the fee side. The other one will be to, you know, directly grow these solutions from those communities. So if you are a diaspora Nigerian or you are a diaspora Moroccan, it's easier for you to develop solutions for your own people from the West and just connect to some of the on-ramp, off-ramp players on the continent. So I would say this is happening, actually. This is happening, but it's happening at a slower rate than many of us would want. So we don't know whether we'll achieve the 3% fee target by 2030, but there are a lot of companies working on these problems.
That's very interesting. Speaking of fintechs, how have you found their reaction to be particularly towards Kotani Pay, but also, you know, other blockchain or crypto facing companies?
Yeah. So a lot of people tend to be hostile to crypto, right? because crypto was meant to disrupt the system. It was meant to take out all the middlemen and bring in a totally new system. So definitely, there are a lot of people who are worried about that. Everyone from current incumbents to politicians, but everyone tends to talk about you know, the blockchain and some of the benefits there. In fact, for me, what I'll say is I'm seeing more benefits with stable coins than anything else. Because stable coins help us to do one thing, you know, several things. One is transfer value that is not fluctuating. So that's a very important part of remittance or, you know, even payments just in general. But secondly, it also helps us to build very good DeFi products. That DeFi products that have yield, DeFi pools where people can contribute. So like there are a couple of these ones that are already up and running, the likes of Goldfinch here in Africa. So I can contribute to a Goldfinch DeFi pool and I'm contributing in USDC or USDT. And then that can then be sent out to companies on the continent in terms of, you know, in lending terms. And then when the companies pay back to the pool, I get back my yield. So again, very interesting applications of blockchain technology, stable coins in DeFi. Bitcoin, the Bitcoin ecosystem is also like working on this. Right? So if you look at Lightning Labs and there's something called the Taro protocol, they're looking to do Lightning native stable coins because again, they have realized you can use Bitcoin as collateral and build a stable coin out of it. These are collateralized stable coins like Celo's case, CUSD, that is based on a bunch of you know, assets from BTC to Ethereum to other assets that are part of that basket. So we slowly all fintechs, all telcos, all banks are realizing there's a lot more potential in the stable coin side of things. And the approach is different. So in some cases, it's open stable coins like DAI, if you're in the crypto ecosystem. In other cases, it's centralized stable coins like USDC, USDT. But you know, to me, that will be the transformative role that perhaps blockchain will play over the next five or so years. Look at, for example, the volume that was in stable coins in 2022. I think it was something like $8 trillion. Visa and MasterCard is doing $12 trillion. So that tells you that stable coins are about to beat the volumes that Visa and MasterCard are doing. And Visa and MasterCard have been the incumbents for very long. So that is a disruptive part of blockchain that I think fintechs and other players are considering very seriously.
You're right in saying the next few years are bound to be very interesting. And I am more than glad to be at the front lines to be able to see all of that happen. But I do have a bit of a surprise for our listener today. We have a cameo per se. We have with us Abigail Monene, and it will make sense in a little bit when she explains who she is and what she does. Hi, Abigail. How are you?
Hi, Miss Papo.
It's so glad to hear your voice again. Could you just share a little bit about what your role is at Kotani Pay?
Great. Thank you for having me here. It's quite a surprise. And my name is Abigail Monene. I work with the digital marketing department for Kotani Pay.
What insight can you perhaps share with us about being at the front lines of the space? Because I can imagine, especially when you're working with marketing, you work with the people. You know, you get to deal with all the stressors of everybody who either wants to do something with you or is generally just, they're curious. They want to know if anything is possible. They want to know what it is that you are exactly doing. Can you share a bit of, you know, what it's like to be in your role?
First, it has been such an interesting journey. For somebody who has not been exposed to Web3 that much, first, it has been such a learning journey. So much learning. I had to do my own self-learning, read articles, go read white papers, make sure you just go out there and read, get as much information, because you can't sell a product that you don't understand. That has been one of my key highlights. And the next thing that has really stood out for me, anytime that we attend this community, Web3 community events, that has really helped me better understand my product, better understand the audience, better understand the community and the needs and the challenges. And by understanding that, it helps me position our company in the right way in terms of how do we want to communicate our product out there to people. So again, being part of this community, being part of the Web3 community, interacting with both women and men in the Web3 community has really exposed me and helped me position our company in the right way, and even get insights on how other companies, other people are strategizing in terms of Web3 and positioning themselves. So yes, those are my key highlights, especially in the marketing. Also, I'm also learning that there is power in numbers, and power in numbers means community. Community basically is the principle for Web3 community. In Kenya, Ghana, community plays such a significant role. Yes.
Now, I am curious about your why, and the reason that I asked you to speak on this here today is because I had a similar journey as you, where it was just a matter of curiosity and I wanted to know what it was all about. So I decided to just dive in and I learned on the way. So I need to know from you, why stick around? You know, last year was possibly one of the worst years that we have had in a while. And worse, of course, because not only was it a terrible bear market for the crypto market, but it's also a macro bear. So doing all of this and learning on the fly and realizing that you were just curious about Web3, but now you're kind of in the thick of it. Why would you decide to stay? What is the why? What is the thing that's keeping you here? Have you discovered a passion for blockchain technology and perhaps potential solutions for your people?
The why is pretty easy for me, because the more I'm learning about blockchain and seeing it's actually just seeing the real world use case of blockchain from Kotani Pay and seeing what other companies are doing blockchain, it's enough to convince me or anyone out here that this is happening and it's here with us and it's going to be there with us in the future. And it's just a matter of time. And we need to all position ourselves, like we need to see where you fit in this world of blockchain, because this is not just an imaginative, we're not just imagining some technology out there. This is something that is actually making impacts to refugees, it's making impacts to farmers, it's making impacts to business people. It's a technology that has real world impact. And for me, everything I do is mostly motivated. Everything I do is mostly motivated by impact. It's impact oriented. So this is why I'm sticking around. This is why I'm sure that it will be here for a while, and I will be here to see it grow. And I want to watch as this product, even our products, as we grow and try to provide services into different markets, because that's the thing. We're not only penetrating one market. We're not only doing remittance. We're not only helping remittance. We're also helping this business person who wants to transfer big volumes of money from one country to another. And, you know, the cross-border transaction rates are crazy. And it's the amount of, like you just mentioned, the amount of money that is being used just for the transaction fee, it's crazy amount. And how about if we can save more on this money and, you know, like just put majority of our money on the volume rather than using so much expense transacting. This is right. For me, blockchain is real world use case and I'm here for it.
I like how you ended that to say I'm here for it, because you know what? I'm also here for it. It's going to knock us down a little bit, you know, it will teach us some things, but we're here for it. And that's what matters. So I think this is a beautiful circle moment here to bring us, you know, back to the beginning of the conversation. So thank you for sharing a bit on, you know, your role and your passions, Abby. To close off the conversation, I have a bit of a cheeky question here for you, Felix. Is there any chance of Katani Pay integrating with the medical field in any which way in the potential future?
Wow. Okay. What a question. Yes, we are open to many use cases, right? So like we have firmly established that we need to, our work for the next 3 to 5 years is making the infrastructure as easy as possible for developers who are developing on it, and for end users who are using it. And so we tend to get quite a number of use cases from, I think we have done gig work payments. We have done inventory financing for small shops in Kenya. We have done DeFi lending to farmers, smart contract insurance to farmers as well. So we are usually very excited about real world use cases. And health could be one of them. Yeah. So like if you're looking at inventory financing on the pharmacy side, or just like different ways to go about healthcare delivery, we are very open to such use cases. So you can always contact us on our website. We have a form. If you fill it, one of us will definitely get back to you, and we can connect on your use case.
Mm-hmm. Are there perhaps any career opportunities in Katani Pay? Is there any hiring ongoing at the moment, or could people be able to contact you as well if they perhaps have ideas on which they could work with you or work for you, or is that maybe perhaps in the future?
Yeah, right you are as well. So we are also expanding our team this year, and you know, there are unique opportunities now with both the layoffs in tech and the layoffs across different finance companies. There are a lot of talented individuals who can join our team. So we will be opening up for VP of growth. So we're looking for a vice president of growth. We're looking for chief of technology for Africa, the whole of Africa. We are looking for a forex trader. We are looking for 2 salespeople, so business development people. And down the line, we'll also be opening up for a VP for developer ecosystem growth with people who will work with him. So basically, community managers. So we are definitely hiring, and this is on our LinkedIn, it will be on our Twitter, it will also be, you can also contact us via the website form.
There you heard it, folks. Look for Katani Pay on LinkedIn or Twitter. And of course, they are hiring. So tell a friend to tell a friend to tell another friend. And if they don't know much about it, tell them to read up about it, to learn about the space, to learn about Katani Pay, and learn about other African innovators and creators. Kudos to you both. And of course, to you, our listener, thank you so much for staying with us until the very end of this conversation. And of course, remember that there is a world yet to discover. And this time, Africa is at the core of the table.
Thank you for spending another episode with me. Just a reminder that none of what we share is financial advice, only opinions of the individuals that make this show possible. You can use the links in the show notes to do your own research. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening from. We are our own wildest dreams, the hope of our own tomorrow. So until next time, keep innovating.